SDK. Welcome to Business Life After Hours, a podcast that takes a deep dive into real-life topics at the intersection of business and life. After the workday ends, that's where we pick up. He's a Grammy winner, a producer, and sound designer for Beyoncé's Renaissance album, one of the top-selling albums of all time. Growing up in Sylvania, Ohio, and finding his music niche in sound design and production, Jamil Ossie is now legendary in the music industry. And he's only just begun. Jamil, welcome. It's fabulous to have you here.
Great. Glad to be here.
So talk to us a little bit more about how many years you've been in the music industry.
Oh, geez, 24
is
at this
right?
point. Professionally, since 2014. So it's been some time. It takes a long time to get going.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about that and the years that you've been in the industry. What is it that you've been doing and that kind of evolution for you?
Geez, I mean, I've started it, you know, recording it when I was in high school, right? Just going down and making ideas on a keyboard, booking studio time, $50 an hour. You know, you leave with a cassette tape back mm-hmm. in those days, and just working with people locally and just trying to help them create their sound even when I was young. Mm-hmm. And over the course of time, you work with more artists, and then you figure out what you're best at. So for me, it was production. So it took someone to tell me later on, like, hey, you know what? You're not the greatest artist vocally. You know, maybe focus on your production. So that's kind of when I made that switch about 2013 into production.
That was a pretty significant moment then. Little did you probably know at that time, like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
So I'm shifting, and maybe you didn't think about that originally, but that was probably some of the best advice you'd received.
It really was.
Mm-hmm.
It does. Because, you know, when you want to make a career out of something, you really have to identify what you're not best at mm-hmm. and find what you're best at and just mm-hmm. move on that. And a lot of people try to do too many things and, you know, focus on what you're best at, master that first, and then you can kind of go and dabble a little bit.
Such good advice, yes. And let's talk about the music industry. There are so many facets to the industry, so many jobs, so many different components that maybe most of us don't understand. So tell us more, if you would, kind of a quick synopsis of what it's like to be in the music industry and some of those jobs.
Yeah. So, you know, for me, production-wise, it's helping the artist get to the destination of the song. That's pulling resources, that's conducting the sessions, or just making sure that the music gets where it needs to be, bringing in, you know, certain writers, or just, you know, whether it be, you know, everyone butts heads and someone has to make a decision. A songwriter, composer really comes in and says, okay, well, let's create the lyric and the melody and let's make what the song is about, if that makes sense. Let's make it catchy. Let's find a way to help the artist identify their vision and how to take it home and make it understandable to the listener.
Mm-hmm.
And then talent managers, of course, are there, so we don't have to worry about negotiating deals or having those phone calls and conversations with people. We just solely focus on creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of like the brief overview of the creating part of it, and then the managers.
Yeah. Now, as Jamil is doing his job every day, tell us what that looks like. How do you start your morning? What is a full day of production?
You know, there's no one way, really. It's kind of like taking whatever the energy that I feel that day and just whatever becomes of it is really what I end up doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no, you know, you don't sit down and say, hey, today I'm going to make a pop song with guitars, right? You sit down and you just let things flow. It's different when there's a project. So people send you stuff to work on and it says, hey, well, I need this from you today. That's different.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're sitting down and just being creative, I kind of just let it tell me, let the day tell me what I'm going to do.
So what part of your job, what aspect do you like the most?
You know, having an outlet. You know, I think we all were artists from pain or from something that might have happened when you're younger. So for me, it just was always a good outlet, a way to express myself in some way that a lot of times is private. You know, if you don't share music with people that you made, no one will ever know, you know, anything about it. So good thing for me now is when you can release music and people get an idea of what you do, they can resonate and connect with it that way. But yeah, I think, that's really what it is for me.
Mm-hmm. So Jamil, you have won a Grammy. What does that feel like to the 12-year-old self inside of you?
It's crazy. You know, I would have never thought back then that something like that would happen. It wasn't even a goal of mine. You know, you didn't sit down and say, I want to win a Grammy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just want to do what you love to do. the Grammy came with it. So now what's great is, you know, my kids are old enough to understand what it is, and you got to appreciate that part. But mm-hmm. it's just confirmation that you're doing, you know, you're doing something right. I don't think you're where you want to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, or, you know, always, right? You know, you may look back in 20 more years and say, okay, well, now I'm where I want to be. A Grammy mm-hmm. doesn't change that. A Grammy just confirmed what, you know, I thought was with being on the right track, mm-hmm. doing what I love to do. You've sacrificed so many years and time to get to that point. And that was just a confirmation of, well, we did something right. So now what comes with that was more overwhelming than what was before, because mm-hmm. now it's like, okay, well, it's a restart. You see all the different angles that start coming at you now, because you have that. So more people want to work. There's more work coming to the table. It's overwhelming now. And now you realize, well, I guess I wasn't ready for what came with it, but I was ready to receive it when it happened, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah, and that's a confidence too, I'm sure, that has grown within you through the years. But I might just have to remind you that you weren't just good at this. You're the best of the best. That Grammy shows that. And I feel like sitting here with you, I'm really honored to hear your story and to have you share that with me.
I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, you don't feel that way sometimes. Sometimes yeah. your struggle with the art, we don't like 90% of what we make. So when it does pan out, you're like, okay, finally we got something right. You know, but mm-hmm. to the outside world, you look at these successful musicians and writers and producers, and we struggle every day, you know, with just being satisfied with what we create.
Mm-hmm. Because you always want to get better. It's that growth mindset.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, I want to talk about that, too. When we talk about your it factor, you know, what was it that Beyonce and her team said, okay, this is the guy, this is who we want?
I think that COVID allowed everyone to take a step back and just try to find a way to connect with themselves, because you had time, mm-hmm. right? You weren't forcing things. Everything slowed down. So when COVID hit, you know, we decided, well, you know what? Maybe we should stop taking on projects that don't resonate with our passion, because mm-hmm. you can produce, we could do music we don't care for, mm-hmm. right? Because we're capable, but we're not necessarily doing what we love. In COVID, we took a step back and we really focused on creating products and ideas that were like that. So long story short, when we started doing that, we made a sound design pack that her team got a hold of. And they kind of came direct to us and said, hey, you know, we heard this sound, we want this sound, would you mind working on the album? Of course we do, right? And that's just how it happened. Within a couple of days, we worked on pre-existing demos that she had. So we didn't make them from scratch, they were already demos. And we just applied what we were doing at that time, which is what we believed in, to her songs. And then that's how it happened. So it was just confirmation again of, if you follow what you believe in, then those things start to happen. Because before that, you had so many almosts mm-hmm. that never panned out. But I feel like we were trying to fit into this circle that we just didn't have a passion for. You know, even if you're capable.
Mm-hmm, right. And it's that point of differentiation that maybe you were initially thinking, no, I don't think I want to put it out there yet. But all of a sudden you put it out there and it's like, that's exactly what people wanted.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always good to follow your passion, though.
Yeah.
Because we can all cook, you know, certain, you know, recipes that, you know, doesn't mean you're the best. It doesn't mean you're a chef,
mm-hmm.
you know, but there's certain things you can make that you would be best at. So it's mm-hmm. good to stick with that.
Well, and it's like you said, too, you don't want to always be the cookie cutter approach and sort of doing what everyone else is doing. And when you do rise to the top because of your differentiating factor, people love it.
Yeah, I think mm-hmm. that's the big thing for me is I've always tried to be different in some way. You do need to learn the fundamentals to get there. But trying to be different is not a bad thing. I think mm-hmm. people look at you and think you're nuts. You only have to be right once.
Yeah.
You know.
So where did the creative seed in you come from?
Probably, you know, childhood struggles and you know, trauma and just, I don't know. I always wanted to be a radio DJ when I was younger. So creating my own music was never on my radar mm-hmm. until maybe I was 14, 15. Mm-hmm. But I was just always into music. I always wanted to create things. I always enjoyed cooking and, you know, I was into just listening to music, but I never knew I was gonna create music. And my sister's an artist, so I think we both, because of our childhood, we both took up the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an outlet for us to express ourselves, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's where it came from. I didn't know what I was doing. I played piano when I was three. Yeah, I read music, everything, did recitals, but didn't create my own music. And at some point, I think it just interested me. I just wanted to create something from that passion. And I wasn't that good at it at first, but just followed it and just kind of crazy, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about the business side of you? You have a great business mind too, do you not?
You try to be, you know. I think the problem in music is everyone's out to take advantage of the creator. And they have a business to run, so that's understandable. But I think we have to be smarter business people ourselves. Mm-hmm. We can't let those things happen. We need to align with the right management and team. And I've had a great mentor in S1 since 2013. And
can't
say enough.
Tell us about S1.
Yeah, so he was my first industry producer that I had met who heard something I did and gave me a chance. Mm. And we worked monthly. We did iChats at the time, and you know, I was sending folders, and he would critique, and we'd go back and forth, and he would just show me how things are done and then identify, hey, this should be better, we could try this. It was never your stuff is no good. It was just, well, here's how you should look at it now. And then that 18 months of kind of working back and forth, and I was winning competitions, and he gave me a chance to work on a project through Interscope at the time. And we kind of took a vocal and rebuilt a song, and then it got placed, and he offered me a deal, and that was in 2014. And ever since then, we work every day. It's just been a great relationship, and he's been a great mentor and a brother and just everything you could ask for. And it helps you develop your own character also, because you see there are good people in the business. Mm-hmm. You know, I was pretty fortunate to have him.
There's something about that uplifting and that believer in you who sees you for exactly who you are and sees your potential.
Yeah, and vice versa. You want to see that in other people too. Right? Some people just want to make money. Some people just want to use you for your ability and just kind of kick you out and bring the next guy in. And you know, I haven't had to experience that. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had a long growth process of growing together. And then you understand each other and how you work. Mm-hmm. And now it's effortless to make anything now. And, you know, you don't fight about it. You understand each other.
And limitless.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's great. You know, there was a Wall Street Journal article that you were featured in, and it said that music wasn't just made during the pandemic, but it was written by the pandemic. How does that strike you? I know you mentioned a little bit about the process during the pandemic and what you were going through and how it worked, but tell us more.
Yeah, now you can do things remote. So at that time, no one was in rooms together, so it made it okay to just do things virtually. Mm-hmm. It's not easy. Working remote isn't as good as being in the room, right? I mean, that'd be, you know, you don't get to feed off of people's energy that way. But that whole era, if you will, created a new pathway, especially for musicians to accomplish those things. And what's great about that time frame is me living in Sylvania, Ohio, gave me an opportunity to do something like Beyonce remote. Mm-hmm. Right? Because that was a thing by then. It was okay. It was accepted. Most people like that. You're in the room. If you weren't in the room, you might not have that opportunity. So I think that COVID might have been one of the best things that happened for technology in many ways. Not talking at all about the sickness or anything. Just based on it forced us to be more creative with how we were going to continue to work. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think that the whole Beyonce situation was possible coming out of COVID. It made it more possible for someone from a small town to have a chance at something like that.
Mm-hmm. And you had mentioned before too about Beyonce and how her creativity really kind of was changed from the pandemic and how she was looking at music as well. And you were quite that match for what she was looking for also. So tell us more.
Yeah, I mean, things just were in alignment. I feel like sometimes you're drawn into the right things at the right time. Mm-hmm. And with the right people. And we thought right when we found out, I would have never guessed with Beyonce, if you asked me years ago, would have never thought something like that would be the artist. Mm-hmm. But she's such an innovator, and we were trying to be, and we've always tried to be. And I just think at the right time, everything aligned, and you know, it was a good fit.
Exactly. And now you talk about the music industry really changing during the pandemic. As we look back at where it was pre-pandemic to now and into the future, how do you see the industry, and specifically as it ties to sound design and production. What's going to change?
Yeah, you know, Web3 is on the forefront, and it's been, you know, it's been a thing. I think it's becoming more of a thing. You're going through the trial and error. You know, it's a token-based system. It allows a fan to own a digital asset of the artist and be closer to, you know, feel like you own a piece of something, and it allows the artist to make more money. There isn't the middleman. Now there's only, you don't have to worry about amassing thousands and thousands of listeners on Spotify. Mm-hmm. You could have success by having 1,000 diehard fans or 100 diehard fans, and you actually can make a decent living, especially for the indie artist. So I think that that's where it's going. I'm a big fan of that approach. I think it's a hard sell to, you know, a lot of people who are afraid to take that chance mm-hmm. into that. But I mean, there's things we were afraid of 20 years ago that are now a common thing. Mm-hmm. So things always evolve that way. So Web3, I think, is where, you know, is really going to be 100% the thing here in the next few years.
Well, and as we look back, we look at some of the people who have been in the industry for 40 years, 50 years, 60 years, and what they went through, the U2s or the Mick, you know, the Mick Jaggers of the world, the Beatles, Gene Holden, some of these people who have been doing this for so long. And then we look at your industry today and what you've been doing and how that has changed and evolved. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I mean, we started on cassette tapes and CDs, and we used to have to mail things out.
Forget 8-tracks.
Right? I have some 8-tracks too that were my uncle's. But yeah, it's unbelievable how that's changed since from then to now. Mm-hmm. And even the way you networked at that time for a musician and how you had to mail things out mm-hmm. to somebody to listen to. And now in 30 seconds, you could finish a song and have it uploaded for the world online. It's mm-hmm. just incredible.
Yeah, streaming has changed everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not great for us. We don't make a lot of money off the streaming, but it's still a great start into where things are headed.
Are there things about the music industry that surprised you when you initially got in and when you really kind of, after you got the Grammy, let's just say, were there things that you were like, wow, this is not what I thought it was going to be?
Definitely. I think I wasn't ready for what came with it. I didn't understand how overwhelming it would be and how you only have so much capacity to do so many things. And you want to put so much on your plate and you want to do everything, right? But then you win a Grammy and then people you didn't work with before, now you're getting access into those sessions, and I just think you bite off more than you can chew. So my big takeaway was I was ready for what happened, but I wasn't ready for understanding of what was going to come with it. So my takeaway has just been knowing that and working on small steps and small sample sizes of what am I going to tackle today. You don't need to work on 10 projects at the same time. Just kind of take on one thing. Let's get that done. You move mm-hmm. on to and doing what you're passionate about. Doesn't just because you have access doesn't mean you have to access it mm-hmm. at all times mm-hmm. or each thing.
Mm-hmm. Keeping things in focus, one foot in front of the other some days, I'm mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I understand
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
What is next for Jameel? Are you going to be collaborating more, partnering? Where do you see the future and what's on the horizon?
Yeah, we've been working on software, actually, and doing more sound design projects and, you know, doing some Web3 stuff with Gala Music and just trying to explore the things that we're passionate about and continue to, you know, you don't want to be on the hamster wheel of chasing an album placement because you end up just creating a bunch of, you know, bulk material. You send it out, you hope something sticks. Mm. So trying to really focus on being strategic, just being intentional about what we're working on and mm-hmm. our passions, which is creating pieces of software for creators to use mm-hmm. or creating sound packs for people to use in their music or just releasing music that you believe in.
Mm-hmm. And remembering your talents and remembering what everyone is looking to you for and what they have been in the first place.
Right.
So I think that's really critical.
Right.
How do you define success?
Character and just keeping bridges built strong and not, you know, and being a good dad, you know, being a husband and just being there for your family, mm-hmm. right? Because I think talent is great, it gets you there, but mm-hmm. character keeps you there. Mm-hmm. That's just always been my thing. And we're not always great at it, but I just believe that if you don't have the right, you could be the most talented person. And if you don't conduct yourself the right way, you may never get that opportunity again, but you can always learn to be better with your talent or with your instrument. But character is just, you almost can't teach it. Mm-hmm. It's just, you learn it, you know, all on your own from seeing other people, but you have to be inspired by the right people. So if you're in the right environment and with the right people, you see and you kind of soak that up. So I've been pretty fortunate to have a good family, to have a great mentor. I think that was all put right in front of me. And so I knew no different. Mm-hmm. It's just remembering that, because even when you get upset, if something doesn't work, we all get upset. But to remind you, okay, let's settle, let's calm down, and you know, let's refocus, because now it's, if, as soon as you lose sight of who you really are, you can really get derailed pretty quickly.
When I would think too, to your point, that fame, winning a Grammy, being associated with the Beyonce team, all of those things really could change that character if you let it.
Yeah, you do see that quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, I see it all the time. Mm-hmm. It's just, and it's easy, and you know, you understand why that would happen to somebody. You just hope that those people have the right people around them to help remind, you know, ground yourself. And hey, you know, at one point you might have been that person that, you know, you might not have gave that chance to now, but don't forget that was you at, you know, at one time. Or mm-hmm. just, there's no reason to treat people, you know, there's so many sharks in every industry, you know, and all the sharks at one point were no different than the beginner, you know. Mm-hmm. There's a guy probably driving an Amazon truck right now who's better than me, just doesn't have an opportunity yet, or is still at that point in life where they're, you know, or you're working at McDonald's, or you're working somewhere where you go home and you're super talented and you've got all the ability in the world and you're doing the right things, but you're just not at that point yet. Mm-hmm. So I think for us, it's being someone who can give them opportunities mm-hmm. at some point, paying it forward and finding ways to inspire the youth and mm-hmm. just give opportunity, you know, especially ones that we didn't have at that time.
That's so true. And the fact that you even know to do that and notice that is really telling about your character. And I do want to talk to you about that. When the workday is done and you have some free time, what do you like to do? If there is such a thing.
If there is free time, I don't know. You know, just of course be with the family, mm-hmm. you know. We're big in sports, you know, we watch a lot of sports. My kid plays travel sports. I like to cook. I wish I could cook more, so I'd probably be some kind of chef.
Oh, favorite dish to cook?
If I could, oh goodness, definitely Italian.
Nice.
Definitely Italian.
I like it. I like that. Yes, and then tell us more about your kids.
You know, two teenagers, so it's a workload for sure, you know, and I think that they're going through the teenage years are tough. You know, and I think that they're great kids and they're smart and they just, you know, they're no different than any other kid who's just trying to find, you know, the best way to move mm-hmm. and, you know, identifying their passions. And, you know, it's okay to not know what you want to be when you grow up. Some people do and some people don't. And we shouldn't, so we don't force that on them. But I'm glad that at least with my last couple of years that they were old enough to know what happened and appreciate it. Now, as opposed to winning a Grammy when they were 5 years old and they would have never remembered it mm-hmm. that way. So,
yeah, absolutely. And you become their role model. And I know you like to mentor students within the community, the region as well, which is really nice that you're giving back to music programs and students around the area.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Trying to be.
That's great. Well, you know, careers and life are always filled with the big wins, but there are also kind of some challenges. What are some of the challenges that you've been through in your life that have really made you who you are?
Well, you know, childhood trauma, for sure. Watching my mom struggle, I think I knew I didn't want to be that person for my kids, like maybe what my dad was for us. And so I think that that also taught me more about not quitting and giving up and kind of work through, you know, that process of healing. And I think that when you get knocked down so many times and then you just kind of keep getting up, it's a real thing, especially in the music business, because that character you develop of failing and trying again and failing, if there's any industry that matters in, it's the music business, because 99% of the time you don't have any success. You know, it's that 1% when you keep trying. But I, you know, again, family was a big part. I've been very fortunate to have good family and good values presented. Doesn't mean that, you know, you didn't struggle, you know, or or anything, but there was always somebody I felt like to talk to. Mm-hmm. That was important, I think. And then I discovered music, which is an outlet, and that was helpful. Within music, there's been so many almosts that happened that you almost got a placement, or you were knocked off the album at the last second, or things like that just kept happening. And it's confirmation that, well, if you got that close, you're close. It doesn't mean you're never going to make it, because there's people who quit when you almost get it so many times and then it never happens. Mm-hmm. For me, I always looked at it, well, if we got this close this time, we're definitely going to get it one of these times. So you just kind of keep going. I think that that's part of the challenge. It's interesting to have a challenge. You don't want things that come easy. I think if it's easy, it's no fun, and it doesn't push you to the limit to be the best person or creator that you can be.
Well, Jamil, we can't thank you enough for being here, for sharing all that you've shared with us today, your talents, your business acumen, your musical abilities. Oh my gosh, we're so glad that you're here and joining us today. So thank you.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you so much.
And thanks for all you do for the music industry and well beyond.
Thank you.
Find success by your own definition at your intersection of business and life on my next podcast. Thanks for joining us. I'm Christy Kay.
Business Life After Hours is hosted and produced by Christy Kay. Audio engineering, production, and editing by Chris Pfeiffer. Be sure to join Christy for her award-winning television series, Business Life 360, the third Thursday of the month on WGTE HD or at wgte.org/b360. Business Life After Hours is a production of WGTE Public Media.